Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of VGCast. My name is Paul/FivGram, aka Dexter23Jack, and today I am joined by Marcus, aka Kulak.
Hello, hello.
Grace, aka Holy Diver or something?
Holy Wing Diver. Not that it matters. Anyway, hello.
Okay. No, say it one more time, because I what was that?
Holy Wing Diver.
What's that from?
It's a combination of Holy Diver, like the Dio song album, and Wing Diver, the class from Earth Defense Force.
Gotcha. Good to know. All right, sorry. Go ahead with the introductions.
Oh, yeah. No. It's fine. Chris, a.k.a. Korea9.
Hey.
Ben, a.k.a. JK394.
Hey.
And last but not least, Javi, a.k.a. Javiously.
What's up?
And today we are going to be talking about the Annapurna published title by Heart Machine, aka Solar Ash. And do you guys remember when this originally... Oh, God. When this game originally came out?
2021.
Okay. That's not too bad. I was looking at the, it was founded in 2013, and I thought that was the release date for the game. And I was just like, why didn't I ever play this before now?
On Steam, the release date is December 8th, 2022.
Okay.
I don't know if it came out on other platforms earlier, but...
Yeah, it launched on Epic first, I think.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Dax, I think you read 2023 as 2013.
No. That's when the studio Heart Machine was founded. That's what I was saying.
Gotcha. Because it hit Switch, Xbox One, and the series consoles on September 14th, 2023.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, Chris, in general, I think you do a really good job of explaining games. And I think you had a tweet earlier that was saying it was kind of like a mix of Shadow of the Colossus and kind of like a skating game like Jet Set Radio.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's like that's kind of your movement as you're on skates, kind of. I mean, it's some futuristic thing, but you're like just platforming around this area until you unlock a boss. There's like tiny enemies every once in a while around, but once you do all the big puzzles, you unlock a boss, and then it becomes kind of like Shadow of the Colossus, where it's this big monster. You're climbing up and hitting weak spots. So that's kind of why I thought it was reminded me of Shadow of the Colossus a little bit. Like, it's more stylized than that. But
I agree with
it. It is more stylized, but honestly, I feel like that also hits nail on the head from like a a narrative standpoint, and that like, oh, you're killing these creatures who are kind of just doing their own thing, and you're just kind of being kind of a little selfish ass.
Yeah. I mean, that also plays into it as well, like as you go through the story, so for sure.
But I guess did anybody want to sum up the game's story?
What little there is, it's very minimal. Okay. I mean, basically, it's there's this giant black hole kind of thing called the Ultra Void about to swallow the planet, and you play as Ray, a Void Runner, who's from that planet. I think they name it once, but I don't remember what the name of it is, the name of the planet. But anyway, you're sent in to stop the Ultra Void from destroying your planet, basically. And most of the narrative kind of comes from, like, the very few NPCs you run into and, like, documents lying around and that kind of thing. So it's very, like I said, minimalist. But the basic overarching thing is kind of like, as you go along, you start to sort of learn more about the Ultra Void and how it works. And you sort of learn that things just aren't quite as they seem, as far as, you know, it's not just about you went in and some teammates of yours also went in, so you're trying to find them as well. But it turns out, like, it's not just as simple as they went in, things went wrong, and now you have to fix it. There's a lot more going on, but we'll talk about like the ending and stuff later on.
No, I think that hits it on the head. And yeah, basically, the black hole, like once you, you know, touch down there, you find a lot of dead bodies, but also just like a collection of worlds that have been kind of just like mushed together. So you've got like, you know, really cloud-based worlds, you've got, you know, acid water worlds, you've got lava worlds, all kind of tied into this kind of beautiful hellscape. But right. Go ahead, Grace.
No, I was just going to say, like, yeah, that's like all the remnants of other worlds that the Ultra Void has destroyed. So you kind of get a sense of like how this works. It basically just like pulls in a world and some chunks of it survive, but for the most part, it's just completely like destroyed, and like the laws of physics no longer apply. So you just see like things like floating around or things upside down, like nothing quite makes sense.
You know, that's more context than I guess I gleaned from the story. I had just assumed all those areas we go to are just that one world that's just been, you know, sort of torn asunder. I didn't realize those are multiple worlds that are sort of popping up here.
Yeah, you've got the cat people, you've got the crustacean people, and then you've got the fungi people. I think those are the kind of quote unquote main races, but every race only has like a single survivor, I think. I didn't get to the end of the like Zap Brannigan crustacean side quest, but I'm assuming everybody in the mothership was found dead, because that's just
yes,
very short-sighted industrial people. Let's electrocute this line we're climbing up, because climbing in the dark is dangerous. Or jumping into boiling acid, even when a member of the crew is just like, hey, the acidity has changed. They're like, it's healing waters! Jump in here, you cad!
Yeah. Not the brightest bulbs. Yeah, there's like one survivor, but he ends up getting off at the end of the side quest. So it doesn't work out for them.
And then, yeah, you've got the cat who... I thought at first, like, the void kind of wreaks havoc on your memory, but it just seems like she did something to a partner of hers, and didn't know he was going to be there when a bomb went off, and just pretty much, like, maybe not delusional, but very, like, almost insane from the guilt, and keeps like forgetting the incident, and then keeps coming back and remembers it like over and over and over again.
Yeah, that kind of ties into one of the things of ending reveals, which I mean, we can go ahead and talk about it. Obviously there's going to be spoilers, but like at the end you find out
not done yet.
At the end you find out that the starseed is this not reversing time, it's just repeating time. So like some of the survivors you see probably are literally reliving the same things over and over, because Ray's like journey always starts and ends at the same place. Like you come in, you do all the stuff, you activate the star seed, and then it just sits you back to where you come in and you do it all over again.
Are you saying it's not a loop, it's a spiral?
What?
It's just an Alan Wake 2 reference.
Yeah, I thought there was a Gurren Lagann reference. It was like, row, row, fight the power?
I'm replaying the first Alan Wake right now before I play the second one, so I'm going to play the second one.
That's fair. What I said won't make sense until it does.
Yeah, so, spoiler, I didn't get to the very end of the game. I'm at the, like... I think I'm at like the 95% mark. I'm about to face the big boss dragon, and then I'm assuming there's another boss beyond that. Maybe you're fighting Echo, which is, I'm guessing, a version of yourself.
Yes. Pretty accurate.
Yeah. Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, it's literally in the name.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean. Like I said, I didn't finish the game. I was studying for my licensure exam this week, so I kind of procrastinated beating the game until the last moment. But regardless, yeah. How did you guys feel about the ending and like the dual choice?
Oh, I felt like the choice didn't really matter too much. I was actually gonna speak a little bit about the gameplay itself, where it It almost feels like Sonic, I guess. You know, you got to go fast. That's what a lot of platforming sort of goes into. And, you know, I'm not super well-versed in sort of where Sonic's gone in modern day, but I thought it did a pretty decent job of that. Like, you never go too fast where it's just ridiculous, but momentum was such a key in, like, you know, delivering on these platforming challenges that I really appreciated that as part of the game, but it also never felt like one little mistake screws you entirely. There's enough checkpoints and there's enough to sort of like, yeah, you know, just sort of circle back around, just to try one more time. Like it was sort of a really chill experience.
Yeah. And there were like, what is it with the, in order to kind of bring out the Shadow of Colossus boss fight in each area, you have to go up to these black masses of goo and stab an eyeball with like a sewing needle, or at least
that was a sewing needle.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
it was
right?
Cool. Whatever it was. Yeah, it was dramatic.
Yeah, no, very stylized, but yeah, you have to go up to each of these things and stab it. At first, it's really simple, but then towards the end, it gradually gets more and more complicated, and sometimes I would have to do that over and over again because I would break the thermometer and then try to go to the next one and then like barely miss the timer and have to like redo it for some of them.
There was one towards the end where I don't remember exactly which world it was, but there's like, the spiral goes up and you have to like platform around it. There's enemies there that you're trying to avoid as they're like shooting the stuff at you. And that one was, I just found it super annoying because like you only have enough time, like there's just enough time to hit it and not being able to. It was like the one time I was like, oh, maybe this platforming isn't super, like, it's not super great because it's not super controlling.
Was it in the lava graveyard area? Is that the encounter? Okay. Yeah, I had to go through and take out all the enemies. That would have been too frustrating otherwise.
Exactly what I did. Yeah, because I ran into that same sort of frustration of, like, they just keep hitting me and screwing me over. So, yeah, I would just run through it and kill them all first and then run back and do it.
Run back and hit it.
Yeah.
Probably should have done that, but it'd been easier, and I wouldn't have been like, this sucks. The one time in the whole game, I'm like, this is really frustrating. Like,
it was a weird difficulty, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, for getting into it, like some of the boss fights I would have to repeat sometimes multiple times because I feel like it would be one of those things where I'd get like 90% through a sequence and then I'd screw up at the very end and have to repeat it all.
It became very much like memory, like memorizing where it is. All right, so like, you know, I did this first phase and that's that, you know, I can do that, no problem. All right, where's the problem point in the second phase? All right, I fucked that up. Well, let's do it again. All right, now I got that. And then you memorize the third phase to finish it off. Like, yeah, they could get a little bit troublesome because you don't know exactly where you need to go. And sometimes because of the way the needle spikes, like where you need to hit the thermometer, like it'll turn you around. So like kind of just get disoriented.
Yeah. And sometimes like, I feel like, or at least with me, it would be like, there would be thermometers like you couldn't like grapple to. And then there would be some where you could grapple to. And sometimes being like, okay, should I end up grappling to that? Because it can mess up your flow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, I felt like some of that stuff could get a little messy at times. It'd be like, okay, I should be able to go. Nope, I can't grapple to that. Okay, starting over.
I think I'd use time stop ability or the time super slow ability more than I probably should have, but just because it gives you that time to think and evaluate, like, oh, you know, like you said, was this a jump I should just grapple to, or should I just keep going? And luckily, like, what, you know, that timer for the black goo slows down at the same time. So there's really no penalty to doing it outside of maybe you click the button a little too early and now you can't use it anymore. So I appreciated that sort of trial and error aspect of it where it really doesn't punish you that hard for messing up.
No, and I think, like earlier you said, this was just a very chill experience. It's not very narrative heavy. You get a little bit of exposition at the beginning of game, kind of in between, areas slash boss fights, but otherwise, like all the narrative is like is told through audio logs, and you can skip that for all you care.
Hello.
Yeah, sorry, we're all here. I was waiting for somebody else to speak.
I don't want to monopolize the conversation for sure. I guess for me, one of those things that I was sort of wondering about and wondering how y'all sort of felt about it was personally, I found the sort of gameplay loop of the game to be, it was tight enough, but quickly became repetitive. So like the way I played this game, I would come in, hit a couple of those little eye things to, unlock a boss. Depending on sort of the length of the session, it could be like, yeah, like I do a boss a session, or I do half of an area a session and then unlock the other half later. But did the way y'all play the game, was that different? Did you just hit larger chunks at a time, or like sort of how did you tackle this one?
I mean,
I finished. Go ahead, Grace.
Sorry, I played it pretty much like Friday and Saturday, this past Friday and Saturday. So I kind of did like big chunks over 2 days. But I do get where you're coming from. This was actually my second time playing it, and like my memory of the first time playing it was this, oh, this is such an amazing game. It's so unique. It's cool and everything. And like that was pretty much all I remember. So going back into it now, it set in like, oh yeah, this is still really cool, but it does kind of have some repetition. Like I didn't remember how, I don't want to say repetitive the boss fights are, but I mean like the first two bosses are almost like not quite identical, but just very, very similar to each other. And even though the other bosses do change things up a little bit, it's still the same basic gameplay loop. So I definitely agree there that it does set in a little bit. But for me, like, besides the fact that I was playing it so close to the time that we were recording, the other reason I was able to like play longer and kind of settle myself into the world is just because I think the world is really cool. Like I love seeing it. I love the traversal mechanics. Like the only thing I don't like is like the regular enemies. They just kind of seem like they're just randomly littered around just for something to do. Like, oh, this game needs regular enemies, so here we go. We're just gonna drop some here and there. That's kind of the only thing that sort of dampened my outlook on it. But it's otherwise, I was just like, I got really sucked into the world, even though, again, there's not a whole lot in terms of like background or explanation for much of anything. It's just like so cool to look at, so cool to move through that, it was easy for me to just settle in and kind of take my time and enjoy myself, as much as I could. So I didn't mind playing for 2 or 3 hours at a time sometimes.
Yeah, the game's definitely, the game's definitely repetitive, I think. It doesn't really, you don't really get any like new tricks or abilities out, pretty much everything you can do from the start, you can just sort of always do. And some of the suits give you like little tiny little upgrades here and there, but you can pretty much just do the same thing, and the enemy variety isn't super, super interesting. But I do think that the world itself and like the traversal, I think is kind of what I really, really like about this, especially since like they do some like weird stuff with gravity, especially in like the later levels. Yeah, that's not, I think the game gets better as far as like level design. It gets better and more interesting the further in you go. I think that's where some of the more like when you're in the acid water area. And then even like the lava stuff, I think that's where the platforming stuff kind of gets more interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up because I think the acid area was kind of my favorite part of the game so far, because I felt like it would kind of help switch things up. It'd be like, oh, these aren't like instant death pits. I can move along them for a certain amount of time. So it kind of added some variety to it. That, and I just like the boss fight going up that guy's sword and fist were, I don't know, fun.
That's such an interesting take, because like to me, that acid area, in particular the acid area, it was just like, oh, this sucks. Like, it's interrupting the flow of the movement so much that it just felt like a different game. And had the game started anywhere near that, I probably would have dropped it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it was just kind of like a fresh breath of air for me. I can see how you could get slightly frustrated with it, but I was just thinking of like all the cool stuff you could do, like, oh, I can completely skip the intended path, I can get a dash to begin with, and just, yeah, at least that was my perspective on the matter.
Yeah, for me, like, I was remembering the place before that, the Eternal Garden, with like the mushrooms that you have to hit and then like take the spores to the whatever thing that activates a door, or activates a rail, activates something. Like, when I got to that area, I was like, oh man, I remember hating this place. But this time around, I was like, oh no, it was fine. Like, I didn't love it or anything, but it was perfectly fine. But when I got to the acid area, like, I didn't really remember anything about it. And when I started, I was like, this actually isn't very fun. I don't like this place.
I guess while we're on the topic, what was everybody's like favorite part of the game, like favorite like world, stage, whatever you want to call it?
So there was one, and I don't know the name, so if anyone can help me out on that front, much appreciated. But there's one where you're climbing up a lot, and sort of your ways to get back to where you were before were like rail lines that had previously been electrified that you would turn off when you were higher up.
That was the beginning of the acid area.
Oh, really? Okay. Like, that part is the bit that, like, I liked, because it was very much a, hey, you need a, you're grinding these rails, oftentimes sort of switching between rails and like making big jumps and, you know, just keeping that momentum going. And it really felt like it was paced just right where, you know, you'd hit checkpoints often enough that it never got frustrating when you'd get to a new point and then would fall down because, you know, it throws a curveball at you. I felt like that was the perfect balance of the game for me.
Yeah, that part really is enjoyable. But then, yeah, it leads to the mirror sea is the acid place. But yeah, I like that part. And I like the last place. I can't even remember what it's called now. But yeah, the lava place. Except for that one, but that one anomaly that we already talked about, where there's enemies like blasting you while you're trying to climb up, that was annoying. But I like that one, and I like the Iron Root Basin, which is like the third area, I think. But I mean, yeah, they're all cool. Like, they all have their own kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and while the city area was cool, I was having trouble finding stuff in that city area. I think that was like the second one.
Yeah, that big skyscraper.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't find all the audio logs in that section. I just unlocked a suit that allows me to find extra audio logs that I missed, so I'll probably go back with that and 100% this game, because, I mean, like, what? I think How Long to Beat says, like, it's just 9 hours for the completionist run-through.
Yeah, that's just finding all the logs and everything, right, and doing the side quests.
Yeah, which I'm already pretty much done with across the board, so no big deal. But yeah, I guess we've kind of touched on narrative light, but decent, at least according to Grace. And then we touched on the gameplay. It's very free flowing. It's fun, but it can get repetitive, at least kind of like how objectives are laid out and all that stuff, even if the movement itself is pretty fun. Did anybody have anything else they wanted to add before we kind of got into kind of more like aesthetics, visual, audio, that sort of thing?
Nah.
Okie doke. Yeah, I mean, so I'm curious, did any of you play the studio's previous game, Hyper Light Drifter?
I tried it just because of the sort of critical acclaim, but I can't say it's anything that holds a special place in my heart.
Okay, I was just wondering like how similar it was to this game. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's really different. It's like a totally different game.
Okay.
Isn't like a top like down Zelda?
Yeah, it's like a top-down kind of hack and slash. It is like a combat-focused title, though. So
okay,
like you got like a parry and a dodge, and like it is very much about like twitchy action. But yeah, this is like a 3D platformer skating game. It's like completely different, but the aesthetic carries through. It's lots of that hot pink and cool blues. Like the color palette is very similar.
Honestly, I feel like, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's like apparent, and even with their upcoming game, like it's very clear that like the art director has an aesthetic that they lean towards, and that has carried through all three games.
Okay. Yeah, because honestly, like, you know, what was it back in the day with Metal Gear Solid 2? Like, there was that skate mode in the game. I wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been like a skate mode in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I know that involves like doing a bunch of mechanics, and that I think Metal Gear Solid 2 kind of took a lot of the mechanics from like Tony Hawk Pro Skater, right?
Well, it was Konami was releasing a skateboarding game, and they kind of had like basically they brought that engine in as like a little extra mode in Metal Gear Solid 2. I forget what the name of the game is called though, but like they actually had an actual skateboarding game that they built that out off of. Okay. Or on top of.
But yeah, I could totally see like just a, you know, like new game plus, or after you beat the game, just going like around the world, collecting SKAT, mm-hmm. skate in the air, finding old videotapes. I feel like that would have been really fun.
Definitely. But I mean, this game has that, it has that like Tony Hawk kind of feeling to it, which I like a lot. So I haven't said much on this show, and honestly, it's because like this game, I hate to say it, but like I like it because it ticks all the boxes of what I should be. I should love this game, like top to bottom. I think it's aesthetically gorgeous. It's a platformer, and it's kind of like borrowing from like Tony Hawk and like that arcadey kind of skating thing, which is another genre that I love. Like these are like my favorite things in video games. But every time I play this game, I kind of fall off it really quick. So I feel like I can't speak with much authority about the game because I didn't finish it. I didn't even get that far. And this is my second time like really trying to get into it. And I couldn't tell you why. Like I'm not sure what it is that isn't hooking me. Maybe I'm just not in the mood, but I've been not in the mood for a long time. So I'm still hoping. Like I know the game's good. Like every time I like look at a review or anything, everybody sings the game's praises, and I'm not like saying that no, it's not good. It's just I don't know what it is. I just have not been in the mood to play it.
I think that's okay. I mean, sometimes a game can seem like completely up your alley on paper, but in, you know, in action, it can work out completely differently.
Yeah.
So I feel like you shouldn't feel too guilty about that. You gave it its 2 cents.
Yeah.
So well, on the other hand, Javi, have you considered, you know, respecting video games and the people who make them?
I've considered it, and I'm choosing not to. No. But I do think that I am absolutely leaving the door open for one day picking this up and like falling in love with it. Like I feel like I should, but today's not that day.
Maybe you just have to wait until you go senile, you know, just give it another like 40-50 years, and then you can play it then.
I thought you were gonna say, because we were talking about how old we are before we started recording, I thought you were gonna say give it another 40-50 minutes and then I'll be ready.
Nah. But yeah, and then music wise I didn't think it was anything too special, but I feel
there
like
there was music here.
Yeah.
Oh shoot, I don't remember that at all. To be fair, pretty quickly into this game I'd be like, okay, this is the part of the game where I can just put on a podcast, and then I'll turn it off for like pause it once I get to a boss fight.
It's very ambient. It's the definition of background music, so it's not something you just like pick up. Like it doesn't hit your ears immediately, regardless of whether you're listening for it or not.
So you're saying I should have just blasted the soundtrack to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2?
Or 1, yeah.
It's always a good call.
I'm not saying that would improve it, but I'm not saying it would make it worse.
Those soundtracks go with anything. Playing Silent Hill 2 to those soundtracks.
But yeah, I guess with that said, I think we've touched on a lot of aspects with this game. I know the story was light, but all in all, I enjoyed the little bits of story that were interjected with the audio logs and stuff. It also kind of gave me, what was it, Outer Wilds vibes? Not even no. just kind of like the space stuff. Wow. Was that because you hold...
It's in such high regard for me that, like, this game, nah, does not touch it. But no,
I was
I'm
just,
sorry.
I was just saying in the sense, like, not just the space vibe, but more in the this or the time loop of vibe, but more in the sense that kind of just like, oh, there's kind of like a finality. Like, you can try to avoid the inevitable for as long as you can, but eventually everything has to kind of come to an end. And I feel like that theme was kind of resonant with the theme from this game.
I get that. I guess my only counterpoint to that, and it's sort of a plus in this game's favor, is just, you know, sort of a lot of that subject matter was covered in the bits that were actually voice acted in the game, which I thought, like, the voice acting for the main character and the sort of counterpart bit, I thought that was very, very nicely done. But that sort of internal struggle or internal slash external struggle that they demonstrated is something that is pretty absent from Outer Wilds. You know, you're not sort of hearing your main character or really anyone else's struggle with that. It's very much the world is presenting that to you. And I don't know if this game really delivers that same sort of world vibe of like, yep, this is it. This is the end of all things, but it's not necessarily the end of life as we know it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, and then you've kind of got like the geopolitical stuff in the background being like, oh yeah, our world couldn't get its shit together in time, so we have to, you know, we're the what is it, I never saw the movie, but Armageddon with Bruce Willis. Kind of just like, oh, we're our planet's last hope, but instead of actually succeeding, it's more like, well, shit, we were too late.
But then that's sort of where Outer Wilds comes back around, and it's like, no, this is just what was going to happen. It wasn't a matter of people didn't act soon enough. It was just, this is it. I think that's part of like where that vibe's a little different, because here, and you know, you hear it a lot in the main character of just like, I was too late. And regardless of how many times the cycle's gone on since then, they were too late. And you have a lot of that regret that's just sort of intertwined throughout the entire story.
Okay, I can see that. There's a bit more, you're saying there's a bit more acceptance with Outer Wilds?
I mean, yeah, I guess just from the perspective of like, this was always going to happen. And it's a matter of like, what do you do with that knowledge, as opposed to Solar Ash, where it's like, nope, you were too late. And if anything, it sort of goes back to a little bit of that Silent Hill bit of just like someone who's having to sort of, you know, reconcile and make peace with that fact. And they're sort of working through their own shit with that, you know, the world sort of reflecting that struggle to try and do something that it's just too late. Like it's just, you're done. But you as the character, you as the person don't know it yet.
No, I think that's a very, very good point. But, yeah. Did anybody have anything else to add before we went into our closing thoughts?
Heart Machine's next game looks really ambitious and interesting. I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but
it's Hyperlight something, right?
Yeah, Hyperlight Drifter. Oh, yeah.
Breaker.
Drifter's the first one.
Yeah. But it's like a procedurally generated open world roguelite.
So no, like, not roguelites! Son of a bitch!
But like, every time you start another run, this open world sandbox is procedurally generated, which may or may not pan out.
Yeah.
But sounds interesting. Like, they're openly like marketing it as like the first of its kind, like, twist on the genre, and it looks really nice, and it's like kind of combat. It's kind of like a mix of both Solar Ash and Hyperlight Drifter, where it's like a combat focus, looking for like a Souls kind of thing, like a high action thing, but then also traversal in like a big space. I don't know. It looks interesting.
Yeah, it says,
what's the gameplay like? I guess as far as like, does it feel like a Hyperlight game. I mean, I could just say Hyper Light Drifter, but like, is, I guess, how much of a departure is it?
Well, I haven't played it, but it looks like it's like an action hack and slash kind of game, but you also, like, it's a roguelite, so you're like on each run, you know, getting new abilities and weapons and this and that. So,
and it's 3D too, right?
Yeah,
probably. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks very nice.
I mean, I'll check it out. Like, I'm not going to write it off just because it's roguelite, but boy, does that knock it down a few pegs in my book.
I mean, I feel that too. Like, I'm a big, like, I'm into VR games, and like, on, especially on PSVR, like, over half of the titles on there are roguelites, and I'm like very sick of that genre. I'm not interested in it, but so, you know, it is what it is.
Just a quick aside, but what was the procedurally generated game that everybody was gaga for? And when it came out, people were disappointed. But
No Man's Sky.
Would you define that as a roguelike or no?
You're not restarting your runs. Yeah, there's no runs in No Man's Sky. You're just like, you're single.
Like, the universe is procedurally generated, but yeah, it's your character. You're, you know, going on the adventure with that character. It's not, once you die, it's over.
Yeah. Did you ever play Spore, Dax?
Oh God, Spore.
Will Wright, the Sims.
Yeah, Will Wright Spore. yeah. Did you ever play that one?
No, I did not.
Okay, because, like, to me, that's sort of more in line with, like, your gameplay loop is pretty set in stone. It's just sort of the dressing that had changed. And again, I am talking about, like, early No Man's Sky, not once they started adding on a bunch of different features to the game. But just where
No Man's Sky has had consistent, huge updates. It had a big update, like, 2 months ago also.
Yeah.
Like, it's just constantly growing. It's kind of unprecedented. Also, that game is really cool in VR. If you have the means, check out No Man's Sky. Super cool.
I did not know that it was available in VR.
Yeah, they've on really
both PSVR and PSVR 2, I believe. Yeah, sure, PC too.
So beware though, if you're sensitive to getting sick, don't try to fly the ship in VR. You can get sick in like half a second once that, like, it starts, your ship starts rolling or whatever, you're like, oh my god, what happened? But it's really, really cool.
But yeah, with that said, Ben, would you be willing to start us off and giving your final thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think as far as a 3D platformer goes, it's an interesting one. It's different than sort of your typical fare, because it's also more of a weird combination of 3D platformer and Shadow of the Colossus. I think some of the boss fight mechanics don't entirely work, but I think, like, as far as like movement and like level design and world building, I think this game is really, really good and really, really impressive. And you know, I think just like skating around and gliding in like a weird kind of bizarre gravity environment is really, really cool. And yeah, I really like the game.
Sweet. And with that said, Grace, do you want to hit us off next?
I'll hit it as far as I can. So like I said, I'll start off by saying I can't really say a whole lot that I haven't already said, but this is my second time playing the game, so it's I've been looking for an excuse to replay it for a while, so I'm glad that we chose it for this, because it gave me a reason to, like, I don't want to say pop it back in. I don't have it on disc because there isn't one, but you know what I mean. It gave me a chance to boot it back up and then run back through the world again, which is the biggest, kind of one of the biggest draws about the game, is just the world, very surreal, very dreamlike. It's kind of inviting, at least to me. Like, you get in there and it's all, you know, fluffy clouds and broken, bizarre architecture, and just like also very strange and weird, and I'm just like, hey, this is pretty cool. So I really love it for that, and of course I do love the traversal. It's very fluid, very, very fast, but as I think Marcus said, it's not too fast. Like, it's not sonic speed, you're not flying all over the place and, you know, crashing through the wall and falling out of the sky like you would in a Sonic Adventure sometimes, but it's really good on that front as well. And of course, the boss fights are they can sometimes feel a little repetitive, but they are a nice show as far as, like, you know, these bosses are huge. They mostly look different from each other. They're all very kind of, they're all just weird, like goo, bony goo creatures, and it's just like, where did this come from? Like, who dreamt up this, you know, crazy, like, world and all the designs in it? Because, like, it's so very just odd, but it's all also, like, unique in that way, and it's just, like, very, very fun to look at, very fun to be in, play around in. So I really appreciate kind of all the elements and the way they come together. It it makes it a really great experience overall.
Nice. And I know you weren't as high on the game, Javi, but what were your final thoughts, all said and done?
I mean, yeah, I'll probably just repeat myself. Or, like, I think it's really gorgeous, really nice looking game. It feels great to run around and skate around and, you know, lock on and shoot into stuff, kind of like a Sonic game. I think it's a good game. I just don't think I was in the mood to play it. But I will revisit it someday, and hopefully it'll click for me.
Okie doke. And Marcus.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm not going to be breaking too much ground here as far as stuff that we haven't already covered. I'll say that the way I consumed this game with those couple objectives, or, you know, a boss at a time, to me felt like my ideal way of playing the game, where that repetitive loop didn't grate on me too much. Once I started sort of feeling like that downside of the game, I would just drop it and, like, just go play something else for the time. But, you know, while I was playing and while I was sort of in that zone, that movement, I think, is something that it's a bit of a visual flourish. Like, I don't really think, like, you know, your character could just be running and you'd have almost the same gameplay impact. But because they try and sell you as, like, skating around this world, you know, it does feed into that sort of dreamlike aspect of things, where it's like, yeah, you know, you're. I don't know if you all have had those dreams where you're like, you really feel like you're running and you're sprinting, but, like, you're moving like molasses through this. This has that similar thing where it's like your person skating around, but you're not skating at a super fast pace. You're just sort of moving and gliding around the world. And combining that with, like, you know, you'd have a quick little slash of whatever your weapon was as you were encountering enemies. I just felt like that was a perfect balance of, like, yep, you encounter an enemy and you can dispatch it if it's dispatchable, but you don't want to run into a bunch of enemies with that, because it's not a one-hit kill. It's not something you're just going to do away with enemies really quickly. So it really felt like one of those things that it encouraged you to maintain your momentum and movement, or you could switch around and like, enter a combat arena and sort of deal with things that way. And like that alone introduced some variety into the game that, you know, I thought was pretty sorely needed. But I think, I want to say Grace touched on this earlier, where it's like, so much of this game is the vibes. And I think they nailed that pretty nicely. It's one of those things where the game's pretty short. I want to say four to five, maybe 6 hours if you're pushing it. And that feels like a good length. Like, I really wouldn't want to play more of this. They feel like they sort of exhausted what they wanted to do with this world and what they wanted to do with the gameplay with that time length. And I think that their respect at the player's time is as much as possible. But, you know, all that said, it feels, sorry, it feels a little also half-baked, I guess, in a certain way. Because, like, you know, I feel like as I'm encountering these different worlds and you're encountering the different people in these worlds, it's not like they have stories they want to tell and they have stories they hint at happening. But you see so little of that. Like, your exposure to this world is in such a limited scope that seeing everything that's come before, like sort of the implications of what's happened before, I don't think it's really delivered to the player in the best way. And I don't know if that's a budget limitation or just sort of like what they ended up putting into the game. But it just sort of, it lessens the impact of a lot of the sort of cataclysmic events that they portray as happening. I'd also put forth, and maybe one of y'all had the answer to it, but like sort of that your encounters with what essentially ends up being yourself. Like, I don't really understand how any of that happened. You know, and some of those questions don't feel like, yeah, they add into sort of that sort of what's going on here, that dreamlike aspect. But when you sort of look at it from a narrative perspective, it's just like, okay, but like, why did that happen? I don't know. Tell me some of the answers.
I think it was just a situation where you have this being that's repeated time so much. She lost her entire sense of identity, and I mean if you want to look at it from like, okay, you know, what's the cause and effect, how did, you know, our character Rae turn into this being called Echo, who perpetually has like a freaking needle pierced through her chest. I think it's a giant metaphor.
Right, but like, so like, I mean, you keep going back to this person, you know, when you're sort of making that sort of incremental quote unquote progress throughout this world as you sort of get back to the same place you started from. When you view it from a metaphorical sense, it makes a little more sense, but when you're trying to view it from like the world that they built sense, like, I don't understand, like, where does this come into play? Just bits like that, where it's just, it feels like a lot of good ideas that just didn't quite tie together well enough. Like, I'm glad I played this game. You know, I want to make that clear that, like, it was pretty cool playing this. And again, the way I played it really was the best way for me to play it. But it's tough for me to recommend it to other people, I think is the thing. It's one of those things where it's like, hey, yeah, try it out for an hour. If you're down with it after that hour, keep going. But if you're not, then I just don't think it's for you. I think the game is that sort of transparent with like what it is, that, you know, after an hour, like, you'll know whether you like it or not.
No, and honestly, I think I agree with a lot of that. I feel like Annapurna games in general, they can be very hit or miss for a lot of people, and then some of it can be rough around the edges. But I feel like I know this Annapurna is not the developer, but just this kind of like style of game, it's kind of very artsy, subjective. So I feel like it kind of, in that vein, it feels like a perfect representation of that publishing studio, which is kind of a little fitting considering that the entire staff of that publishing studio left due to internal conflict.
Is that still where they sit at this day? Is that just, are they just done?
Well, Annapurna is quote unquote brainchild of a very having a brain fart right now.
The guy who owns Oracle.
No, I think it's his daughter, actually.
Well, it's he's seeded the money, but yeah, he's like, he's the funder of it.
Okay.
His daughter is just the one that's kind of like, oh, I want to be in charge of something. So he's like, all right, well, here you go.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Heroes guy involved in some point in that?
No, the Heroes guy was Outer Wilds.
Was that exclusively?
I think so. He was responsible for helping put that studio together, I thought.
Well,
yeah.
No more than I would, but that's interesting, okay, to hear. I guess I'm not... So, like, as far as Annapurna Interactive goes, or their game publishing side, like, do they still have projects in the works?
They have contracts. Like, they're still going to publish, I guess, the games that were out there, but...
Including Alan Wake 2!
Woo! So their deal with Remedy, because it's not for Alan Wake 2 was published by Epic, but their deal with Remedy is actually with Annapurna Pictures. So it shouldn't impact anything with Remedy. on that. It's very weird. Because that happened like basically back to back. It was like, you know, Remedy was like, hey, we've signed a deal with Annapurna. And then next thing you know is like everybody left Annapurna Interactive. But I guess their deal is not impacted because it was with Annapurna Pictures directly. So they're getting money to make their game while Annapurna gets the rights to make like TV and movie stuff off of their properties.
Okay. And yeah, just to answer your question, Marcus, Masi Okai, the time traveler hero guy in Heroes, that actor is the founder of the studio that did Outer Wild.
Gotcha. So just that one studio.
Yeah, just that one studio.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
And I'm just passing along what I saw in a YouTube video. But from what I understand, the founder of Heart Machine named the studio that because he happens to have a heart condition where, like, basically he could pass at any time, and so that's just always top of mind. And I guess the themes of the two games they've made so far both are about mortality and the finality of life and that everything's temporary. So I guess do with that information what you will, but I think it's an interesting lens to look at, you know, what these games are about through. So yeah.
No, I think that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, I thought when I was reading the Wikipedia, I heard that the studio was named after a congenital heart effect or heart disease, but I didn't know the founder of the studio had that. So thanks for sharing. And yeah, finally, Chris, do you want to take us away?
Sure. I really liked the game. I didn't really care about the story. Didn't. Like, whatever. It was there, but it was really, like, the gameplay. Like, I really enjoyed playing the gameplay, traversing the world, and ultimately fighting those big bosses. I found it really cool. I ended up playing it in, like, three fairly decently. I mean, not, like, super long. I guess, like, probably two and a half hours each sessions. So I was a little more engaged with it directly than Marcus was. Like, I didn't feel the repetitiveness wearing on me that I was like, I need to jump out of this. It's like play a couple hours and be done with it. And it's a fairly short game in general. It's only, I think it took me about six and a half hours total. So it's not long. So yeah, I really, really liked it. Really liked the style to it. Didn't care about story, like didn't really care whatever the metaphor was or, you know, whatever. We're in the time loop and got to stop it. That's all I really cared about. Like, I'm going to grind these rails and hit these thermometers and do cool shit. And
isn't that a metaphor like a video for life?
Game. Yeah, sure.
We're all just out here grinding rails.
It's like played it like a video game ass video game. Like good for me. I enjoyed it.
Nice. Oh, I had cut off Dax on this sort of point earlier in the game, but we didn't touch on it a little bit before we started recording. Who decided, at least on your first playthrough, to stop the cycle versus sort of perpetuating it?
So what is the continue the cycle is the one kind of just the game just kind of ends?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so I did that first just to see what would happen. And knowing that the game kind of like is making a save right there anyway, so I was going to do both anyway because there was an achievement tied to them. So
yeah. I was just gonna end the cycle. The Mushroom Elders made me feel guilty. I'm very selfish. I exist outside of life and death itself, and I am defiling all of their beliefs. So yeah,
good for you.
But yeah, no, so that's Solar Ash, and whose turn is it to pick our game for this next episode?
I think it's Chris, right?
I believe Grace said it was me. She has the ultimate spreadsheet, so
we really needed you for this one.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of. We could have just bugged him.
I could have given you a list later. Is that accurate, though? Grace, yes. Am I the... Yeah.
Yeah, it's
all right. So, I don't know how you guys are going to take to this. I've selected four games that are like 25 years old or so. The theme is more RPGs. So that might be where you guys like want to throw daggers at me. But I picked five from specific like era of PlayStation RPGs. So here we go. I'm going to start dropping them in.
Oh boy. Okay.
I'm gonna need some of you fucking nerds to tell me what the shortest one of these are, and that'll be my vote.
It's the second one, but that might be the hardest one to
Dios mios.
Yeah, I was gonna say I haven't finished it just because it's so like the save system is so obtuse. You just have to beat a boss, and it's like, okay, here's a save point. Now go play for another 6 hours.
Star Ocean also has a remake that I think it might have actually just left PS Plus, but yeah, the remake is shorter. Shorter than the original, yeah, by like 20 hours.
And you want us to play the original or the
either one? They're both. It's the story's the same, so.
I'm going to play the one that's 20 hours shorter. My God, how is there such a big gulf between those two?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've not played the remake, so.
It's saying the original is 40.5 hours long, just if you straight line it. But the sequel is 26 hours. The remake,
yeah. I'm not sure
But less, I guess.
I think Vagrant Story might be one of the shorter ones on this list. Let me check.
It does say 10 to 15 hours. So that's getting my vote. I don't know what it is, but
Bigger Story is 24.
What the fuck? What's this 10 to 15 I saw on Google then? Oh man.
How long is Vagrant Story? Yeah, 24 for 24 hours, and then yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Javi, you played a lot of JRPGs. Which one's good?
Oh, I hear Chrono Cross is great. I haven't played any of these, actually. I had friends that were in love with Legend of Dragoon back in the day, so I'm sure they're all great. Like, these are all like classics, so you can't really go wrong. It's just it's going to be very, very long.
It's a real Chrono New Year's Cross thing we're aiming at here, I think.
It's a real Sophie's choice here.
It's gonna be hard getting together in December anyway, Marcus. So
that makes sense.
Give you a little bit of extra time.
Let's just do another round.
Middle finger as we exit 2024. Either way, huh?
So it's looking like everybody has voted, and
I have not. No, I'm still. I'm like Googling these. I've never heard of this Kudelka thing.
So there, it's the first game in a series that might know more by the PlayStation 2 sequel that it got, Shadow Hearts.
Oh,
it's also it's a horror based role playing game. I find really cool. I really like that game. But
what? Hold on, let me look into that one. It would be funny if you said it's the first game in the Kudelka series.
No. Shadow Hearts is like the trilogy that it got on PlayStation 2, and that's probably what most people know of. Like, they don't know of this weird Japanese RPG that's horror.
I'm 12 and a half hours for that, but you, Grace, you were saying the save system's really weird for that game?
I mean, like, it's not really weird, I guess, but you have to beat a boss to open up a save point. So, like, if you don't know where you're going, you spend a lot of time without being able to save unless you keep backtracking constantly. I've never finished it, so I don't know how bad it gets, but I started it and I was like, okay, I got to a save point. Let's pick this up next year.
I guess a valid question here, though, Chris, is, oh, accessible are any of these games?
So Legend of Dragoon, I believe it is available on PlayStation Plus. I don't know what tier, but it's on one of them. That's really, Kudelka is probably the hardest one to play, and if you guys
choose that one,
I will, outside of this, I will send you the ROM file for it. Like, You'll just need like a PSP emulator.
He's admitting to crimes here, folks.
It's a PSP game?
Chris PS1
is
game,
allegedly going to be sending us a ROM file.
Yeah, well,
if you put allegedly in front of it, he's got a cover.
You cannot actively buy this game anywhere. Like I don't think that SNK is going to chase after me for sending you guys a the ROM file.
ROM
for
in
it.
Minecraft. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
No, an alarm's going to go off in the lawyer office at Namco. We got one.
But Javi, it's a 4-disc game, and there's like the PSP version of it though is like all of them bundled together. So you just play that version instead of having the 4 discs.
I love it. Hey, look, Kodelka is pulling ahead. What's going on here?
I double voted Kodelka. I don't want to choose another one. I Googled said, nah, do Kodelka. The other ones are like 40 hours. What the fuck?
Oh, look, Kodelka's flying ahead.
People just extra voting.
Marcus really double voted. Just was like,
what? We get two votes. People. I just put them on the same game.
That is literally the least accessible one out of these. I mean, like Chrono Cross has a remake and Star.
Yeah,
the most interesting.
Vagrant Story is on PS3 at least.
Star Ocean was still on PS Plus. I would have voted for that.
Yeah, Chrono Cross just got a remaster not too long ago, so it's available on everything.
Did it really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you can play it on Steam now if you want.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, it's what's the name of the remake?
Radical Dreamers Edition.
Yeah. What?
I mean, it's a square ass game, man. Like
radical.
We are radical dreamers.
Hey, Naruto. Nice.
I will send you guys the file tomorrow if we're actually doing it.
Love it.
Yeah, I think small part due to Marcus's campaigning and double vote. We are going to be playing Kodelka next month, and I'm probably going to mispronounce it every time I say that name.
To be fair, Dax, I mean, I've been a fan of this game for 25 years, and I don't know if Kodelka is the proper pronunciation. I don't know.
Did they ever say it in the game?
I don't think so.
Oh, no.
Maybe they do. Maybe it's like Resident Evil at the beginning where you press start and it like says the name of the game that one time, but I don't remember.
Kodelka.
Kodelka.
So this is a gunshot.
Yeah,
this is a horror JRPG on the PS1. Is that right? Oh man, dude, you are speaking my language. I am stoked. This is awesome.
And then next episode, Javi hates it.
I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah,
this is the dumbest game I've ever played. All right, well, we're gonna play the least accessible game available then.
I'm gonna get this on my Steam Deck, and I'm gonna settle in. It's gonna be cozy.
Yeah, that was why I bought this game or got interested in the game and bought it eventually. It was because, like, I just read, a horror turn based RPG. Like, I didn't really see that. Gotta check it out.
Yeah.
Do you have it physically?
That's a genre blend I've never heard of.
I had it physically, Marcus. So when it came out, I got it. And then I, like, stupidly, like, you know, like as we all do, traded it away to get more games. And now I really regret it because it's like a $400 game.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's like real, like, and that's like if I want the Japanese version, like it's really hard to get a US version on eBay in a box or all the discs. Like sometimes like we have disc 2. Would you like disc 2? No, I'd like all the discs.
Yeah, like, piecemeal it together. Like, okay, I'll get disc 2 now and wait for a nice deal on disc 3.
Okay. Note to self, if I ever go back in time, pick up Action Comics number 1 and of course Kodelka. English copy. Mm-hmm. I'll be rich.
You could just do one Powerball. Probably be square on that.
No, but that's how they weed out the time travelers.
Oh, they just have someone post it up at the gas station and shoot anyone who picks the right number.
No, at the lottery office, silly. That's where you have to go to get the money.
Fair. Yeah, fair.
But yeah, I think that's an episode. Chris, Ben, Grace, Javi, Marcus, yep. Thank you so much for joining me here today. And yeah, we'll we'll see you all for the next episode, probably sometime in January.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Bye, y'all.